and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency.
So I have here a quote from the BBC that I'd like to read and then comment on and then ask you a question about, Elise.
Okay.
It says the UK Met, this is a quote, UK Met Office, I think Met Office, by the way, is meteorological office, like the government meteorology, right. You know, kind of like the National Weather Service of the United States, but for the UK. Okay. So the quote, UK Met Office researchers say there's now around a 50-50 chance that the world will warm by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius over the next 5 years, unquote. So I'm not sure why this is significant. It's going to go above 1.5 degrees Celsius for sure.
Yes.
It's just a question of when. I mean, if it doesn't get there in 5 years, they're saying, okay, it could get there in the next 5 years. But if it's not 5 years, it will get there in 6 years or 7 years, or I would think 10 years at most. Of course, it will probably be less than 5 years. Anytime you hear an estimate, it turns out to be overly optimistic. But even if this one isn't, we are going to get to 1.5. What's the difference overall for the world, whether it's done in 5 years or whether it's done in 6 years? It's like a meaningless threshold.
Well, you know, maybe they're trying to communicate that things are more dire than the talking heads and the government heads are presenting, that in fact, things are accelerating. And no, we're not looking at 2050. We're looking at, I don't know, 2027, 2025. And so that, you know, we need to act quickly rather than just, you know, waiting for that, as you said, that threshold to hit 10 years from now.
So
I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah. And I would like, that's the charitable reading, right? I would like to believe that they are trying to communicate that. I fear that they're actually communicating the opposite, that they're right. Failing to convey by saying, well, there's a 50-50 chance that we're going to cross 1.5 in 5 years. If people read 50-50 chance that we'll cross 1.5, they might think, well, wait a minute, does that mean there's a 50-50 chance that global warming is bad? Which is not, like, that would be a misreading. There is 100% chance that global warming is going to happen, and there's 100% chance that global warming is bad. So
well,
it's like they're confusing
true.
It.
Yes. Well, it's also, you know, I know the Met Office likes to put out these dire predictions and then they pull it back, you know, because they also don't want to scare people at the same time, which is, it's a strange dance that they do. But I do think you're right that folks are going to walk away from this feeling as if, you know, one, they have some time, but things mm-hmm. aren't as bad. 50-50 chances, those are good chances. I guess we can live with that. And what does that mean to the average person anyway? So, you know, it certainly doesn't put fire under people to do any sort of climate action or to put fire under their politicians.
Just in case anyone is listening and doesn't already understand this point, there is, in fact, it 100% chance of massive global heating causing massive global catastrophe unless we quite quickly stop fossil fuel use. And I mean, like, globally, you know, with all the transformation that would imply. So just in case somebody's listening and is misunderstanding that scenario, and as long as we keep emitting at anything like the levels we're emitting now, there is 100% chance of massive global warming and major global catastrophe as a result.
Sure. And this is kind of a global north view of things. I mean, so ask yourself what someone in Pakistan might say about this particular prediction. It's become even, it's almost it's almost obscene. And when you think about the high temperatures that folks are facing right now, you know, 50 degrees Celsius temperatures on a regular basis. And so to hear this is really to hear a report that doesn't take into consideration the fact that people are suffering now, and that 50-50 chance doesn't make a difference to what I am experiencing today.
Yep.
In my drought ridden country, in my heat, overheated country. It doesn't make any difference. According to CBC News, scientists say that urgent steps are needed for humans to adapt to extreme heat, including rethinking the way we live, work, and blast the AC. Again, that's the blast the AC thing. Uh-huh. You know, whatever the case is, these extremes are going to become more common. They're going to be common in places that have never experienced this kind of heat.
Yep.
And so, you know, India and Pakistan, according to this news article, saw temperatures soar to 50 degrees Celsius, killing at least 90 people and devastating agricultural harvests. It says that South Asia, along with Africa, Australia, and U.S. Gulf states, now face potentially fatal combinations of heat and humidity, conditions that scientists hadn't anticipated until later this century. So, you know, soon enough, we're not going to be saying, well, there's a 50-50 chance that we're going to get the 1.5 degrees Celsius. That's not going to matter. What's going to matter is that things are getting increasingly worse, and it's challenging. It will challenge our ability to adapt to a climate-changed world.
If not over, well, challenge is the charitable word. The IPCC is telling us it could overwhelm our ability to adapt.
Yes. Yes. Which is a nice way of saying, well, we might go extinct, which is why we call ourselves Extinction Rebellion. The possibility. I mean, if it's going to overwhelm our ability to adapt, what does that really mean?
Well, it means we can't handle this. Like the level with all of our technology, with all of our collective human resources, we can't actually handle what happens if global temperature gets above 1.5 degrees Celsius and stays that high. Point being, it is way better if we think about what to do about this. It's already too late to say in advance, but in advance of it getting much worse than it already is. Like what there needs to be, it's unthinkable to have no level of planning, to have no level of like collective thought about how to exist in a world, both as humans and as humans who are co-evolving with other species, plants, animals, all the other life that we share the planet with. Mm-hmm. This is going to be happening. We're going to be facing extreme heat far hotter than we are now. What are we going to do? We have to start thinking about that. We have to start making some sort of, we have to start taking steps. Otherwise, we're looking at both mass death and an increasingly unpleasant life for those who survive, because they'll be shut off in their little boxes, blasting the air conditioning all the time and unable to go outside for very long. That'll become life. That's not going to be pleasant, even for the survivors.
No, it will not. And there will be increasingly, you know, a number of folks who will be protecting themselves from that at the expense of others. So, as the vast majority of us will be exposed to the elements and exposed to deprivation, some folks are going to be holed up, you know, still taking their trips to space.
Escaping, even. So, you know, one of the things getting in the way of the necessary reflection, planning, foresight that has to happen is media misinformation. And if we can go back to that BBC article that we started with for a minute here, there's the second of two quotes that I'd like to read out from that article, where they were talking about the likelihood of global temperatures increasing above 1.5 degrees Celsius within 5 years. Of course, to repeat, the likelihood of global temperatures increasing above 1.5 degrees Celsius is 100%. It's just a question of exactly how long it's going to take for us to pass that threshold. So BBC article says, so I'll read this quote to you, Elise, and then I'll comment on it and then see what you think.
Sure.
Quote, such a rise would be temporary, but researchers are concerned about the overall direction of temperatures, unquote. Now, that sentence, I think, is quite misleading. A rise would be temporary phrasing. What they mean is that the average global temperatures will dip up and down above a certain threshold. Some days or even some years, it'll be this hot versus that hot. It'll be slightly warmer, slightly cooler, and overall trend will be up. So eventually we'll get up above 1.5 Celsius and stay up above 1.5 degrees Celsius. But in the meantime, there will be this dipping up and down. So the average reader who's not like, an average reader who actually does read that sentence carefully might miss that the fact that it's eventually going to get above 1.5 and stay above 1.5. They might think, because the wording is a rise would be temporary, they might think that means that global warming is a temporary thing.
Yeah.
It's eventually going to get better and go back to what it was before, which is not the case. That does not match the climate science. So the BBC's wording does not convey that the temperatures are increasing permanently. It makes it sound like they're increasing temporarily. That's false. So what I wonder when I read this stuff is this deliberate? And this is just an example of you know, it could be any number, it could be hundreds of articles we could read. We happen to be picking on the BBC today. But as a case of what the news media does when they word things in a misleading or fuzzy way, are this deliberate, or are they just not good at this stuff? Are they actually misleading us and trying to create an impression that it's not so bad, everybody, on purpose? Or are they just not good at saying facts?
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. And we're talking about the UK Met Office researchers saying that there's now around a 50-50 chance that the world will warm by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius over the next 5 years. And we're calling into question that claim.
Well, the framing of the claim, too.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
It could be both. I mean, they are, I don't know about the BBC, but certainly our press here is very much corporate owned. And so there's some interests that are protected from not putting out putting it in terms that convey how stark a situation we're in. So there's that. And then there are folks who simply, or writers who simply aren't grasping things as deeply as they should.
You're being so charitable.
Have I been charitable? You know, because if I'm not charitable, then I'm cussing and I'm trying. So I'm trying to avoid how I usually talk about that, but I'll try to figure it out so I'm not so charitable.
We are on the radio, after all.
This is true. but they're not getting it. And they're also, even if they do get it, there's some interest that they have to serve and not putting things out in starker terms. And then I think there's this ideology that if you tell people how bad the news is, then they won't pay attention. And I think that is, that's a questionable, theory, because, you know, there's some of us who know how bad things are, and we got up and we hit the streets, and we said, enough is enough. And if we hadn't read how bad things were, we would probably be sitting around just waiting for our politicians to act. So I don't believe knowing the truth keeps people from acting. I don't even think it keeps us from hoping. It just simply, they're sad facts, and let's deal with them. So, you know, I think that's part of how the media also operates. It's like, let's not make people feel sad and hopeless.
That's some deep stuff, Elise. It doesn't keep us from hoping. I like that. I don't have anything quite so deep to follow it with, except I won't try. I'll just point out, like, one of the reasons I'm so struck to see this in the BBC is because they're not privately owned. They're public. Mm-hmm. They're public, and they operate supposedly independently from the elected officials in the British government. Right. But there's some advertising and sponsorship stuff that might affect what they do. So I'm not trying to say that they're perfect, but they're like way more public than any,
exactly,
just this about any of the news media in the United States. I mean, you know, the Pacifica Radio Network accepted, you know, our station being entirely listener supported. Although that's still private in a way, but not susceptible to advertisers. And that's one of the key things about, you know, let me just put in a plug. That's quite a sincere point about why we are here on WBAI able to have this conversation is because we're listener supported and not susceptible to advertisers. But still, the BBC isn't like owned by, isn't directly owned by anyone, and isn't directly owned by anyone who has an axe to grind. So you can't have Rupert Murdoch telling you what to say. Like, that just doesn't exist. So it's especially interesting when you see this there. And they're one of the better ones in terms of like major prominent news outlets. And they're one of the better ones in terms of their coverage of climate change. And yet they're still not nailing it. In fact, not, they have quite a ways to go before they're nailing it.
Well, you know, I also think that there are, this is kind of connected to what I was also saying, but I think there are also people who are writing about climate crisis and understanding the gravity of it, but are afraid to really face just how severe our crisis is. And so, you know, you get this from climate activists. Well, we shouldn't be talking about how, you know, how bad things are. And are afraid to. It's really driven by this fear of, oh my God, this is what we're doing. And so this is maybe another charitable reading, but maybe that's also behind some of the ways in which these things get framed. If I don't write it, it can't be true. It can't be true for me.
Okay, so
there are also people.
Excuse me. One gloss on what you just said is, well, they can't quite bring themselves to believe how bad it is. And therefore, they can't quite state in the strongest possible terms how bad it is. Like, which, by the way, if true, that really exalts somebody like David Wallace Wells, who wrote the book, The Uninhabitable Earth, who really said how bad it was, or the people who were, you know, involved in setting up Extinction Rebellion in the first place. I mean, the level of courage that it takes to be able to do that, if that's in fact what's going on. There's another possibility that you alluded to a few minutes ago, Elise, which was that, maybe they think that this is the best, way to bring people along toward the truth, as though we writers and editors of mainstream news are masterminds of how to like manipulate public attitudes. And we're doing it with these totally altruistic purposes. We are so genius at this that we know exactly how far we can go and what we can say. And there's a master plan in bringing people toward the truth. If so, first observation, that's absolutely contrary to Extinction Rebellion's first demand, which is tell the truth. And that is one of the things that really attracted me to Extinction Rebellion in the first place. Like, we are not going to compromise on that. Tell the truth is number one priority. That's the first step.
Sure.
But if they have that attitude, they are wrong. I mean, maybe our friends at the New York Times have that attitude. Maybe they actually believe that about themselves, that, you know, there's a certain exalted self-impression, or our friends at the New Yorker, where I did a fact-checking gig for at one point. So like maybe our friend, you know, so I can say like, there's a certain exalted opinion of themselves.
Sure.
Maybe they see it that way, or is it something worse than that? Is there actually, you know, is there a thought that we counter hypothesis, counter view? Do they think we journalists ought to try to help people, you know, adjust to this world and make people help support the existing system? And if we say the existing system is causing mass catastrophe and it's guaranteed to cause mass catastrophe, well, that goes against our job. It's part of our job as journalists, not ours, you or my, Elise, but you know, if we're talking about mainstream journalists, do they think that part of their job is to like help build ideological support for the existing system? And a whole lot of media scholars say that that's what the news media do.
Sure.
If so, they have a strong reason to fudge climate data. If so, they have a strong reason to try to present it in this way, pick a 5-year threshold so they can say 50-50. Because if they picked a 10-year threshold, the probability becomes through the roof that you're going to see huge global temperature increase. So is it sinister? Is it almost nihilistic, not nihilistic because they do believe in something, but the thing they believe in is the status quo rather than change.
Well, you know, I want to hesitate on that one, not because it's not true, but I'm trying to think about it in terms of it being something that they are conscious of or something that is part of groupthink or what have you. You know, do they sit around and say, you know, we're trying to save the status quo. We can't write that. Maybe they do say that. But maybe it's also, you know, these gentle prodding questions that they might have with each other, you know, that sort of push this ideological framework forward to preserve the status quo without really them saying it. Right. Sinister would have me think, yeah, they sit back and say, we can't tell people this. We can't. And maybe they do. We can't tell people this because they will destroy this country. They will destroy us because they will be mad about what we did. So we can't say that. You know, it's always possible. I'm unwilling to be that cynical, but I also just don't throw that out the water. It's like throw that out this window and say, okay, that can't possibly be happening. So,
well, and it could be a combination in the sense that it's like different things happening at different levels. So, sure. You know, the level of the rank and file reporters or even the section editors could be a groupthink dynamic, whereas the very senior levels of the editor in chief and the publishers and the board of directors could be an entirely different discussion. After all, if we're talking about not the BBC, but if we're talking about like major American news media outlets or major Australian or UK other than publicly owned media outlets or a whole lot of media, right? In many countries, many countries where they're privately owned companies who are accountable to their shareholders. Well, those folks are sitting around and when they're sitting around in the boardrooms, they're talking about how to maximize profits and shareholder value. And they are not talking about how to like be loyal to the truth. That is not how the conversation goes.
That's right. That's right.
And that's not sinister conspiracy theoretical stuff. That's just what they actually say in their stockholder meetings.
That's what it is
to be a privately owned or publicly traded, but I mean, for profit corporation, which most mainstream media outlets are.
Yeah. And so so I think that's entirely true. I was thinking about the sole reporter who starts to write this stuff and thinks, I probably shouldn't add this because either it's going to get cut out or I'm going to be isolated. So let me just put it this way. So there's also that kind of work that goes on, considering one, you know, the top level executives that you're talking about, but then also the group thinking within the actual amongst the reporters themselves. You know?
Yeah, and they have to keep their jobs. They may be worried about that.
Yeah, and they may not have even been told that they need to worry about that, but they understand what kind of institution they've stepped into.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM, and you are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. And we're talking about news media motivations. What's going on with them when they will word things about climate change in this highly misleading way? WBAI 99.5 FM. So I would like to make one more point on this topic, although of course there's more to be said about news media and climate. It's not that this conversation is done, but there's something else that occurs to me to say right now, which is that within a certain range, it is possible to help induce news media to do better. Extinction Rebellion has done protests at news media headquarters, and in some cases actually gotten results. There's good reason to think so. I was part of a protest myself at the Boston Globe headquarters, and we did various forms of pressure, including that you know, sort of confrontational at your front door protest. And not long thereafter, there were a lot more front page stories about climate change than there used to be in the Boston Globe. And there was an announcement of a hire to focus specifically on climate change and a regular section of the paper that would be dedicated to it. There's some reason to think that our activism had a role in doing that. The Boston Globe still has a ways to go, but they are at least moving in the right direction. much too slowly and much too late. But still, this, like, having, so I don't want a listener to, in this discussion, to feel like we're being total naysayers on the ability of the news media to do better. But we should just understand what the dynamics are that we're up against.
Yes, we should. Yes, we should.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Wednesday at 2 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM. Together with my co-host, nurse, family therapist, Richardina Theodore, we delve into the explosive issues in mental health. Our mission is to help you know yourself, release your anxieties and your depression, and free your mind. Only on WBAI, the voice of the voiceless, can we voiceless ones be heard. Support the show and WBAI by donating at give2wbai.org. That's the word give, the number 2, at wbai.org. Or by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. You can support the show and the station even more by going to give2wbai.org and giving a monthly donation of as little as $10 per month as a WBAI buddy to your favorite show on WBAI 99.5 FM.
This is the mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing.
Testing.
Tune into Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright. On Tuesday, June 7th at 9 p.m., we'll be joined by director Erwin Moss and actress Sung Yun Cho to discuss A Kid Like Rishi, a morally intense docuplay about a notorious racial profiling police killing case at a train station in The Hague.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
Yeah, if it's brewed with a cannoli.
Oh, wow.
Hey, this is Baby K.
And this is DJ Kyle McNeil.
Of The Sweet Spot. And we are so excited to announce our brand new time slot. Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. to midnight.
Sangre Soulful Sounds, old and new.
Brand new day, Tuesdays at 10 p.m.
Only on WBAI 99.5 FM.
New York's Pacifica Radio. Sweet Tuesday, darling Tuesday, baby, take us.
Tuesday. Hello, I'm Max Schmid, staff representative to WBAI's local station board, inviting you to the next LSB meeting, Wednesday, June 8th at 7 p.m. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Once again, 922-457-2995. And the password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995.995.99. The password again, 995-995-99. In these unusual and difficult times, the Pacifica Network is struggling financially, so the LSB is working to have WBAI distinguish itself by doing everything necessary to be financially strong. That means increasing listenership, membership, and particularly listener contributions. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we sure hope you do. Please visit WBAI.org or call our pledge line at 212-209-2950 and donate to help strengthen WBAI. Thank you.
The previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, and that is heard Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor, and this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.